We now continue with part two of our lecture on the nature of schools of esoteric wisdom. Maimonides goes on, and it's interesting because the last one was in chapter that I quoted was chapter 5, verse 1. Here's chapter 6, verse 1 on the same subject. It is a duty to honor every teacher, even if he is not one's own. As it is said, quote, "You shall rise up before the hoary head and honor the face of the old man," end quote. He's quoting Leviticus 19:32. And then he explains. He says, old man, the words old man, refers to one who has acquired wisdom. Does not just mean learning. It's beyond that. It means has attained to the level of the Sefira Hakma. Okay? So we're talking about a journey of your intellect upward, up the 10 Sefirot. A raising of the level of your psycho-spiritual consciousness to the point of Hakma. That's when you acquire wisdom. So that's what I'm talking about when I say that your purpose here, and my purpose is to give to you the methods and the information necessary to help you acquire wisdom. That means, yeah, you're going to know a lot of stuff out of the Torah, but you're going to, more importantly, experience a change in yourself through the process of perfection, individuation, that's going to allow God to come in contact with you and allow you to rise up Jacob's ladder and see the halls and the palaces that the Merkabah mystics saw. To speak with the angels that are in those halls and palaces and receive esoteric information. And after you do this, you will be fit to teach. Another statement. This one from... I'd like you to consider this writing that comes from the pre-Zoharic 13th century Kabbalist Rabbi Jacob ben Sheshet. He says, so this is prior to the Zohar. This is how ancient these concepts are. Know that the pronouncements of our rabbis, may their memories be blessed, are words of the living God. And one should never contradict them. But it is also a commandment for each wise man to make innovations in the Torah according to his ability. So what does this say? This says that the teachings that the rabbis give you should never be contradicted because that shows disrespect and ignorance. Disrespect because you are contradicting and embarrassing somebody who is superior to you in terms of effort and achievement on the spiritual path. And ignorance because, as this Kabbalist says here, the words, the pronouncements of our rabbis just means teachers, okay, this is before they ever had any schools to make rabbis. All teaching was done in the method that I'm discussing here in this class today. Okay, the model of where you have a master and a circle of students. Okay, and rabbi is a word for, is like rebbe, they both mean teacher. So the ignorance is, if a student contradicts the rabbi, is that student has forgotten that those words were given to the rabbi by the living God. Just as I have told you from time to time, that part of what I teach you is not only what the sages have passed down to me, but also a small portion of that is a result of divine inspiration on the part of the Ruach HaKodesh. That's the Holy Spirit. It comes from the living God, from the Shekinah, the divine presence. But then it goes on to say, but it is also a commandment for each wise man to make innovations in the Torah according to his ability. What? That means just anybody can teach and write down, or write down and teach new things that didn't come from the sages? I thought you just read a statement that that we are to build a fence around the Torah, meaning don't let anybody change it. Yeah, I did say it. It's not a contradiction, though, because it says here, it is a commandment for each wise man. Okay, so this is a mitzvah for each wise man. Not just anybody, not some wiseacre, but a wise man. A wise man, by definition, means a person who has attained to the level of Sefira Hakma, which is wisdom. Okay, and as I said, once you get to that point, you can begin to teach. And when you do that, you too will experience divine inspiration from the Ruach HaKodesh. Okay? That way, the learning is always fresh to fit the times and circumstances of each generation, and to reveal more and more of what the concealed God as time goes on, in working up to the time of the Mashiach Ben Dovid, who comes at the end of time. So, to sum this up, the relationship between a teacher and his or her students should be one of mutual honor and respect. Why did I not include some teachings regarding my attitude as a teacher toward you, my students? Because it is you, the student, that needs to hear this information. I have already gone through this. I have already learned this years ago and incorporated it into my relationship with you. I have the utmost respect of you all, and I honor you. I see myself in all of you. I see the potential that all of you have to gain the skills that will allow you to dare to do great things for God, as the Baal Shem Tov teaches us that we are to do. Okay, our last subject here is the discipline of the ego. And this all has to do with what we're doing in this room and in all of our shiurim, all of our classes. The discipline of the ego. Okay, in a school of esoteric wisdom, or a school of esoteric, a mystery school, so to speak, the student does not learn only the relationship of the ten sefirot, or other technical things about the ten sefirot and how they interact amongst themselves in the Godhead. The student must find a way to grow psycho-spiritually. And I mentioned this earlier. And why? So that he or she can experience a higher level relationship with God. The whole idea, I said the whole foundation of why you're here and why I'm here, is to help you attain wisdom, the level of wisdom, Hakma. And what I'm saying is that what has to happen in order for this to happen, for you to grow psycho-spiritually, is to do this, the student must undergo a process whereby the student's personal ego is diminished from its normal state of inflation. Now, here, be silent in your mind, and listen what I'm saying, because I know right now some of you who are hearing this are going, how does he think he knows what's in my mind? Who the hell does he think he is? Boy, is his ego inflated. How does he know what I'm thinking or where I'm at? Believe me, I do. Okay? Because I've been at this for some time. And I know if you're coming to this class and you've been here for a while, where you are. I can tell by your responses, by how often you come in and go out, by how often you attend or consistently you attend. I can tell by any number of things. And don't forget, there is a chrism that goes out from me to everybody who listens. Okay? So, what I'm telling you is that if you want to attain the level of Sefira Hakma, which is wisdom, then you have to find a way to grow psycho-spiritually. And the only way you can do that is to undergo a process whereby your personal ego is diminished from its normal state of inflation. This is called The Ripening of the Ego by Sri Ramakrishna, Vedanta Hinduism, the great avatar of the 19th century. Okay? So this isn't just peculiar to Kabbalah. This is the same in all mystical systems, regardless of the religious container that they are in. So Sri Ramakrishna called this process of diminishment of the personal ego, he called it the ripening of the ego, which means that until you undergo this process, your ego is unripe, not capable of producing anything but rot and stagnation. Okay, and this process is called by Carl Gustav Jung, individuation. It's the same process. How does this occur? The first step is to come to that place where you can realize, not just intellectually, but feel the emotional and intuitive impact of the knowledge that one knows nothing and can know nothing. You have to internalize this. You have to process this concept. You have to internalize it, and it will change your relationship with your ego. You see, there's another part of you that's not your ego. There's the observer who can observe his ego. It's called self-observation in the Gurdjieff system. Okay? Self-observation, the observer, the inner eye, can look at the ego. And that relationship will be changed. For one thing, that observer will be separate from the ego more often and see the ego doing arrogant and stupid things. And that will occur more and more often. And so what you have to do is you have to come to the point where you know that you know nothing and that you can know nothing. Now, this is true also of myself. The more that one learns on this path, the more you realize there is that God has for you to learn. And that what you thought was out there in the universe of things concealed and unlearned, still to be learned, is much vaster than what you ever thought it was. And that's one of the great things you learn when you achieve union with God, is you realize how insignificant the human species and individual being is. And yet, the species as a collective and the species as individuals are both divine. They are the body, as a collective, they are the body of God's divine presence in exile. They make up the body of the Shekinah. Okay? But to get to this point where you can move forward, the first step is to realize that one knows nothing and ultimately can know nothing, because God, in the form of the transcendent, eternal thought or spirit or being, is ineffable, transcendent, utterly unknowable, only describable by using negatives. God is not. Ein Sof is not this. Ein Sof is not that. Okay, now here are three quotes I'd like to give you, three teachings from great spiritual sources. The first comes from Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, a tzaddik of perhaps even greater stature than his great grandfather, who was the Baal Shem Tov. You've heard me mention and sometimes quote from him. The Baal Shem Tov means master of the good name. He was the founder of Hasidism in Eastern and Southern Europe. The founder of Hasidism. Okay, here's what his great-grandson, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov, who is considered by many to be even of a higher level, tzaddik, meaning righteous one, than the Baal Shem Tov. He says, "A person knows nothing, for there is always a level of ignorance which lies a step beyond that on which a person is standing. The goal of all knowledge of God is to realize first that one is truly ignorant." Now, that's what I was just telling you. And the person through whom God acted to get me to do this teaching today, who has left and will not return to our classes, of this person's own choice and with my blessing, and no enmity on my part at all. I've been through this many times before. And I saw it when I was a student. Saw it happen with other people. Because it's something that happens all the time. But anyway, this was the problem of one of the problems of this person. This person wanted to contradict me, and you've already heard the readings about that. Okay? And how one must never do that for very good reasons. And in doing so, displayed a level of ignorance about Torah and about oral Torah, and was trying to contradict me, which means that this person was saying, no, I know more than you know. I've been studying with my friends for a number of years. No, we don't have a teacher. We think that we can learn just as much by reading from books as we can by listening to you. In fact, I already think I know more than you. And so this is the problem. This person evidently has never read all of the great body of work, of writings by the Tzaddikim in Hasidism, which was a way of spiritualizing, bringing mysticism and Kabbalah to the ordinary man, taking it out of the halls of the scholars and bringing it down to the level of the ordinary man, which is a level of great holiness. Not a low level, a level of great holiness, because God is in each and every person. And there's a whole lot more of the people who are poor and working and unemployed and struggling and suffering in this world than there are scholars. And so whereas prior to the Baal Shem Tov in the 18th century, he's in the 1700s, so in the 18th century, prior to him, Kabbalah was the realm of scholars. All these people who were Kabbalists before him were scholars. They had access to libraries and manuscripts. They didn't have to work. They were supported by their families, by their wives, by friends, and by sponsors, other wealthy people. And I'm not saying these Tzaddikim were wealthy, because they weren't, but they were supported and did not have to work. But God is not just in the scholars. God, in fact, is more in the common man than he is in the scholars. And there's an innocence and a beauty in those who work with their hands and their minds for a living that is not in the scholars, who abstract everything, whereas working people live life. They don't observe life and comment on it. They live life. They are life, and life takes place through them. And that's where God wants to be. God wants to be where the action is. God wants to be where people will let him in. And who better to let God in than someone who is suffering all the vicissitudes, all the problems and mistreatments and misfortunes of life. And so that's what Hasidism is all about, is bringing Kabbalah to them in a form of mysticism that removes all of the scholarly, not scholarly influences, but the allusions and references and rules, such as stating that you have to memorize or learn the entire Talmud before you can study Kabbalah. Well, nobody's ever going to get to study that except for the scholars. So, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov said, a person knows nothing, for there's always a level of ignorance which lies a step beyond that on which a person is standing, and the goal of all knowledge of God is to realize first that one is truly ignorant. Two more quotes, and then I'll wrap this up. The Zohar 1:30a says, quote, it says, referring now to Isaiah, using Roman numerals, what is that? That's 40, Isaiah chapter 40, verse 26. It says, "Lift up your eyes on high and see who hath created these." This is the limit of inquiry, for wisdom was completed from Ayin, which I'll tell you right now, Ayin means nothing. For wisdom was completed from Ayin, nothing, which is no subject of inquiry, since it is too deeply hidden and recondite to be comprehended. That's the Zohar, 1, page 38. Okay? So wisdom was made out of nothing. And now this final quote, which carries on that, this comes from Dov Ber, Rabbi Dov Ber. He was an 18th century Hasidic tzaddik. His more technical real name is Magid Devarav Le Yaakov. Okay, everybody just refers to him as Dov Ber, a very famous Hasidic rabbi of the 18th century. Here's what he says. Remember the Zohar passage. Think of yourself as Ayin and forget yourself totally. Then you can transcend time, rising to the world of thought, where all is equal, life and death, ocean and dry land. Such is not the case if you are attached to the material nature of this world. If you think of yourself as something, then God cannot clothe himself in you. For God is infinite, and no vessel can contain God unless you think of yourself as Ayin, nothing. Think about it. If the vessel of your psyche, of the totality of your composite body, which is a vessel, if it's completely full of itself, of its own inflated ego, then there's no room for God. No room for God. It's only, God can only go into a vessel which is empty. You can't pour wine into a full jar. Into a jar that's already full. And again, that's what this student did not understand. These are fundamental concepts about learning. She just could not understand it. Even when I tried to explain it to her in a series of instant messages over the last 2 days, we went back and forth at quite a length, and she just never had her listening ears on. She was never hearing what I was saying, and she was just totally sure that that she knew more than I did, and that I should yield to her. And if I didn't yield to her, then I was engaged in quote-unquote, an egotistical brat. An egotistical brat who was engaging in a pissing contest. No, I'm just trying to help you get farther along the spiritual path than the place you're at right now. But, you know, not everybody's prepared to be on the spiritual path, or at least on this one, the one that I'm teaching. Okay, now, finally, Rabbi Nachman of Breslov said, I just lost the quote here. Something, my screen jumped and I lost the quote. Please bear with me for a second while I find where that is. Use the go-to function here. And then at least I know where the beginning is. Now, if I can scroll down without it jumping to who knows where. My notes are a real mess, I have to tell you. All right, here we go. Okay, where's Rabbi Nachman? Okay, and what he says about being humble. He says, "I have spoken with many great tzaddikim. They are all said," these are teachers, okay? These are great teachers. Like my teacher is a tzaddik. He does not consider himself a tzaddik, and yet he is. And now remember what I just said to you about him not thinking he's a tzaddik. He truly doesn't think he's a tzaddik, but everybody who has learned from him knows that he is. Okay? And here's what Rabbi Nachman says of the great tzaddikim. I have spoken with many great tzaddikim. They all said that they attained their high level through prustic. Okay, this is a, I'm not sure if it's Yiddish or Polish or Hebrew. I'll have to look it up sometime. But here's what it means. It's in his tongue. It means absolute ordinariness or ignorance. They would do the most ordinary things, secluding themselves and conversing with God. This is how they attained what they did. Happy are they. So what he's saying is all the many great tzaddikim, these sages, these men of great learning and experience who have achieved the level of wisdom of Sefira Hakma, they all told him that they attained that high level through absolute ignorance, absolute ordinariness. They didn't put on airs. They were humble. They recognized that they were nothing. They were I-N, because wisdom comes from nothing. Okay? So, to sum this up, in this about ego, the work on the ego, in this school, we are not egalitarian. We're not a group of equals searching for truth. Rather, we have a hierarchy in which there's room for only one ego, the ego of the teacher. And why is that acceptable? Because the teacher's ego has been disciplined and ripened over many decades. Nor is this school a democratic republic. We don't vote on who our teacher or the master of the school is. Rather, it's a benign dictatorship in which the school's master is who founded the school and who continues to make all the decisions and control all of its activities. And all of the students, you, ones to come, ones who hear this later on, because I'm going to load this up onto the internet, post it on our website, and so people will download it. And I noticed in our statistics that we're so far this month, and the month isn't even over, we've had over 200 people, and I know that's not in the millions like Amazon, but when you're talking about this type of learning, that's a large number. 200 individual separate visitors to our website, and many of them are downloading these teachings, the audio files. And so what you need to understand, as I said, is that I am the school's founder, its master, and its teacher. And so I will not tolerate people who do not want to conform to the concepts about which I've been teaching in this year. This is going to be our handbook. It always has been, but for those who are new, haven't heard it. This is our model. This is our way. It's not the only way, and I'm not the only teacher. But it's the way that I have received from my teacher, Reb Yaakov Leib HaKohen, who received it from his teacher, James Kirsch, who received it from his teacher, and on, backward in time. This is the way of the Kabbalistic masters and sages. It may be your way also, if you're willing to embrace it and commit to it. That's all the more that I'm going to teach on today. I've gone on a long time, but it has to be taught in one go. So I apologize for its size, but it has to be taught in one go. I might break it up into two parts on the internet so it's faster to download. I think I'll do that. All right. This will be rebroadcast in the same room tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 p.m. Pacific Time. And our next meeting will be, let's see, what is this, Wednesday? It'll be next Monday, and I will continue on the subject we were going to teach on today, but did not. This is was a necessary interruption, in my opinion. All right. In the meantime, I want you to remember, I ask that God bless you and keep you, that he make his face to shine upon you, that you remember God at least twice each day, that you go from strength to strength, that you be strong, Zygesund.